Hello and welcome. I'm James, and as always, I'm joined by Lisa. Today, we're diving into a topic that's absolutely foundational in effective teaching, learning objectives and outcomes. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, James. Yes, I'm excited about this one because, honestly, clear, measurable objectives are the backbone of lessons that actually lead to learning. Without them, it's a bit like teaching with your eyes closed, isn't it?
Exactly. And I think a lot of teachers have heard that objectives should be clear and measurable. But what does that really mean in practice? There's a structure you can follow, and today we're going to unpack that, step by step. Let's start with what makes a good learning objective.
Right. So, a well-written objective needs to be observable and measurable. One of the most useful models for this is the ABCD model. That's audience, behavior, condition, and degree. In other words, who is learning, what are they doing, under what conditions, and how well do they need to do it?
Let's give an example. Suppose you're teaching biology, and you write, given prepared microscope slides and a labeled diagram, students will identify and label at least 6 major organelles in plant and animal cells with 80% accuracy. That checks all the boxes. It's clear who, what, how, and to what standard.
Yes, and the key is to use measurable verbs. Think about verbs from Bloom's taxonomy. Things like identify, describe, explain, construct, or evaluate. You want to avoid vague terms like understand, know, or appreciate because you can't actually observe or measure those directly.
That's so important. And another thing is that objectives should always align with a standard, whether that's a national curriculum, a local framework, or a specific unit goal. That way, you can justify your choices and show exactly what students are supposed to achieve.
Absolutely. And don't forget to include different types of objectives. So, not just knowledge, like facts and concepts, but also skills, like procedural or analytical skills, and even dispositions, such as communication or collaboration. Especially with 21st century skills being so important now.
Once you've written your teacher-facing objective, the next step is to translate it into a student-friendly outcome. This is where those "I can" statements come in. For example, instead of "students will explain photosynthesis," you might say, "by the end of this lesson, I can explain how plants use sunlight to make sugar and list the reactants and products of photosynthesis."
Right, and pairing that with success criteria is crucial. So, for the photosynthesis example, the success criteria could be: lists at least 2 reactants and 2 products, draws a labeled diagram of where photosynthesis occurs, and explains the role of light energy in 2 sentences. It gives students a really clear target.
There's a handy checklist you can use when writing objectives and outcomes. Are they aligned to a curriculum standard? Do they use an observable verb? Is there a clear condition and degree? Have you included at least 1 skill-based outcome, not just fact recall?
And have you made a student-friendly translation, like that "I can" statement? Have you included success criteria so students know what achievement looks like? Plus, it's important to plan at least 1 formative check during class and think ahead to the summative assessment, whether that's a test, project, or something else.
Let's map this to a lesson structure. In a typical lesson, say, following the top teacher approach, you might have motivation, a 10-minute teaching chunk, activation, reflection, and then repeat or homework. The objectives guide what you teach, what activities you plan, and what you assess.
For motivation, in the first 5 minutes, you'd state the objective in student-friendly language, connect it to real life, and maybe do a quick diagnostic check, like a thumbs up, down, or a sticky note for preconceptions. It sets the tone and helps you know where students are starting.
Then in the teaching chunk, no more than 10 minutes. You focus only on the content necessary to meet the objective, using worked examples tied to your success criteria. It keeps things focused and avoids overload.
For activation, this is where students practice and explore. You design activities that will actually produce evidence for the objectives. For example, microscope stations for biology or concept mapping. And you include differentiation options, so all students can work towards the same objective, but at their own level.
Reflection is next. This is where students report what they can now do, maybe through an exit ticket or something like an information ladder. It's also the chance to correct misconceptions right away before they become ingrained.
And then, repeat or homework for consolidation. Quick, low-stakes tasks that reinforce the success criteria. Things like mini-quizzes, exit tickets, or short written responses. The idea is to keep formative checks quick and directly linked to the objectives.
Summative assessment then needs to measure the exact behaviors you named in your objectives. And, of course, you need to make sure you provide accommodations as needed, extra time, quieter spaces, alternative formats, so all students can demonstrate what they know.
Let's walk through a worked example. Suppose you're teaching a ninth grade biology lesson on cell structure and function. Your main knowledge objective might be, given microscope slides and labeled diagrams, students will identify and label at least 6 major organelles in plant and animal cells with at least 80% accuracy.
For skills, you might have, given an investigation and observation checklist, students will compare and record differences between plant and animal cells, and construct a comparative table and labeled sketch that correctly attributes 3 structural differences. And for scientific explanation, using microscope observations and textbook diagrams, students will explain how at least 2 organelles contribute to energy production, with a claim, evidence, and explanation in a paragraph.
And you'd translate those for students at the start of the lesson. By the end of this lesson, I can identify and label major organelles, make a table comparing plant and animal cell structures, and explain how mitochondria and chloroplasts help cells get energy, with evidence.
Then you make the success criteria visible. 6 organelles labeled correctly, table includes 3 accurate differences, and explanation uses a claim evidence reasoning format. It's all crystal clear for students.
Formative checks fit naturally into each lesson phase. For motivation, maybe show 2 cell images and have students note 1 observable difference. In the teaching chunk, you label a slide together and ask targeted questions. During activation, students use microscopes and complete worksheets or tables, and you circulate with a checklist.
Reflection might be an exit ticket or ladder, with prompts like, after this lesson, I know. I understand. I can use this information too. And for homework, a quick retrieval task, like labeling a blank cell diagram or writing a claim evidence reasoning sentence.
For summative evidence, you could have a short lab report, a practical performance task, or an end-of-unit quiz. And you'd use rubrics, for example, 6 organelles correct is proficient, 4 or 5 is developing, and so on. For explanation, a 4-point rubric for the claim evidence reasoning paragraph.
It's also vital to have accommodations ready. Things like extra time, a quieter environment, a scribe, or alternative formats, but always measuring the same behavior.
And differentiation is key. Struggling learners might get a word bank or paired support, while advanced learners could predict how organelles function under stress or design a simple experiment.
There are also some common pitfalls, like using non-measurable verbs, objectives that are too broad, poor alignment between formative tasks and objectives, or not making success criteria visible to students. All of these can be avoided with a structured approach.
Before you teach, run through your final checklist. Objectives in ABCD form, student-friendly outcomes with visible success criteria, a focused teaching chunk, activation tasks that produce observable evidence, formative checks and feedback loops, summative evidence, and all your materials and templates ready to go.
When you use this approach, you turn curriculum content into precise, teachable plans. Students know exactly what success looks like, assessments measure the right things, and you can refine your lesson each time. It really does make life easier in the long run.
And if you save your objectives, student outcomes, and rubrics in your lesson notebook, you'll only need to tweak and improve each year, not start from scratch. That's a huge time saver.
Well, that's all for today's episode on learning objectives and outcomes. Thanks for listening, and we hope you found this practical and inspiring.
Thanks, everyone, and happy planning.